It is always a great pleasure to catch up with this man. Always a fascinating listen, Scoob, with the lens that he looks through into the world of sport. Of course, he is a partner at major law firm Thompson Gear. His name is Justin Cool, great friend of the station. Morning, Quilly.
Good morning, Sammy, Simon. Hope you guys are well.
Great to have you on. We are well and hope you are too. A bit to talk to you about, actually. I thought of you when I read the story around Nick Kyrgios over the weekend, and this is something that's been coming for a long time, of course. He did end up pleading guilty in the ACT Magistrates Court, a charge of common assault against his former girlfriend, Chiara Passari. Now, he ended up being let off in the end. It was dismissed, Quilly, despite the fact that he pled guilty. So I just, without getting bogged down in the minutiae of this case, as we say in the classics, what actually has taken place here?
Yeah, look, I must admit I was interested in the language dismissed, because back in the day when I was at uni, dismissed meant the charges were thrown out. That is, you know, there was no guilty finding. Mm. That's changed recently, and I actually went and did a bit of research. Can't say criminal law and the ACT is my specialty, so I went and had a good look into it the day it all unfolded. And there's a setup up there, pretty similar to down here in Victoria, similar to New South Wales, whereby a magistrate can find a charge proven, and it's nearly always when someone pleads guilty, you know, they do the right thing and put their hand up and say, okay, I'm guilty, then the magistrate can say, look, I'm going to let you off. And the charges, the word is dismissed, but there's still a guilty finding. So it's not like the magistrate threw this out and said, this didn't happen. This happened. He's guilty of it. He committed the offence. But the law says it's low level. It's not that serious. So we're not going to, impose a conviction that will travel with you for the rest of your life. Now, if he does it again, then he would be very, very unlikely to be able to get that sort of dismissal again.
And I did notice that his team, Quilly, tried to argue that the charge should be dismissed on the grounds of his mental health, but then that was withdrawn because the court found that he's not, in their mind, currently suffering a significant depressive illness. So then that led to him pleading guilty in the aftermath of that.
That's right. And look, I think the really interesting thing about this is going to be whether the ATP do anything, firstly. And secondly, and perhaps more importantly, when you consider one of the Grand Slams is in the US and they have very, very strict visa laws, and they don't ask, have you got a conviction? What they ask is, have you had a finding of guilt made against you? So Kyrgios's team are going to have to think long and hard about how they answer that and how they deal with that on his visa application when he tries to go to the US for the US Open, assuming he's going to be there. I might say it's my birthday and I'm going over to the US Open as a little aside. But I think that's going to be a really, really interesting thing. And of course, we saw Djokovic last year have visa problems. In the past, nobody really thought about visa issues for elite sportsmen, but clearly it's an issue, and this might be an issue for him.
Justin, really interested in your thoughts. This morning, what's bobbed its head up is the banning of the AFL within the Queenswood Girls' School. Now, they don't play rugby either at the school. I'm really interested to understand the ramifications of this ban. Do the AFL need to, in some way, deal with this? Because I'm just saying that if these guys ban it, other schools are going to be pressured to follow suit. And this, you know, brain injury concussion discussion, it seems to be a long way from settling. How should this be handled?
Look, I've got to say, Scoob, I'm really not across the across the detail of that one at all. But just to pick up the one thing you did say there, which was, it's a long way from being settled. I think we're really just at the start of this. There's a whole stack of knowledge that we have now that we didn't have, but we know that there's a whole stack of knowledge we don't have. And until you get all the facts and the data, I mean, of course, you've got to make decisions along the way. But those decisions are rarely perfect if you don't have all the facts. And I think, you know, we'll see this space develop over coming years. But, yeah, it's probably about as much as I can say. I'm more in the dark than most.
Speaking to partner of major law firm Thompson Gear, Quilly, yesterday, 10 years to the day it was since Essendon self-reported, of course, a story that rocked Australian sport, not just football, their concerns about what their players are injected with 12 months prior. And, of course, the Essendon 34, so much has been written and said and heard of them in recent times. Now, it's in the news at the moment because obviously Administrative Appeals Tribunal in Brisbane's trying to rule on whether the anti-doping agency documents related to that case will be released under FOI, Freedom of Information laws. Obviously, SIA, Sport Integrity Australia, the AFL, Essendon are all trying to prevent the release, rather. I mean, it must take you back in time. You were right in the middle of it back then. I guess all the complexities around guiding us in the media about what we could and couldn't say and what we could and couldn't report, and it must bring it all back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I lived and breathed this at the time. And it was, you know, most stories have a shelf life of, you know, maybe a week, maybe a month or a couple of months. Here we are 10 years later, and there really hasn't been much of a gap. We're still talking about it. And Sammy, you'll recall back in the day, I used to come down onto the news desk at the Herald Sun most nights, and I was literally sitting in between. I had Rubber on my right and had Mick Warner on my left. And, geez, I tell you what, if you ever want curly legal questions and fast on-the-job training, that's the way to do it. Sit between those two. But look, yeah, they were heady times. You know, I mean, I went along to a lot of meetings with sources, with checking facts. It was tough. I've got to say the two things that stick out to me about this, and the first is an absolute disgrace, and honestly, it gets me really riled up. Even 10 years later, the so-called darkest day in Australian sport wasn't dark at all. It was a bunch of politicians effectively shoehorning all our sports leaders into a room to announce this darkest day in Australian sport. And I think we all thought, oh my God, our sports are all corrupted. Turns out it was absolutely nothing. I'm pretty sure to say that there's been, as a result of those allegations, there's been no person charged with a criminal offence. You know, this is the corruption they talked about. And I think it was, if you think back at the time, the government were under pressure. Julia Gillard's leadership was under pressure in the weeks leading up to it, and there's a lot of speculation, I think there's something in this, that they did that for a distraction. And that set off a chain of events. Now, I'm certainly not saying Essendon did nothing wrong. Clearly there were issues there, and Stephen Dank is probably right down at the bottom of my list of people I have respect for. He just obfuscated every opportunity. He danced and dodged every question he could. So I've got no time at all for him. But it all started with that, I think, really, just totally false allegation of the darkest day in Australian sport.
Did you have much to do with Stephen Dank, Quilly? Now, a read over the weekend, obviously, Mick Warner's story, he's saying he was set up, of course, and that things have been tampered with and his phone was confiscated, and he's obviously long denied any use of thymosin beta-4. He actually says in documents tendered to the court that his texts were manipulated by investigators. So I guess this speaks to everything you're talking back to a decade ago.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing that annoyed me the most is Dan kept saying the whole time, I'll come and I'll give the evidence that'll clear the players at the appropriate time. And he just sort of kept trotting out this line. And that was fine in the first week or two or even month or two. But as months went on, it was apparent he didn't have this evidence, he didn't have this proof, and he wasn't even really willing to subject himself to proper scrutiny. He only chose to speak on occasions where he had control, if you like, and he couldn't be absolutely forced to answer questions. He sued the Herald Sun back in the day. Pretty happy to say he withdrew the charge. I got to sit opposite him at one point, and it's one of the things in my career that I've enjoyed the most, because I got free rein. Nobody allowed to interrupt me, and I just got to absolutely go to town on him. And so look, I won't and can't say what was spoken about, but look, it was they were heady times. They were I think on Mick Warner and Robbo's podcast I've listened to, it's definitely worth a listen. Those guys go through it in the minutiae of it is there in the podcast. And Mick Warner says something like, you know, it was like the gangland days where there was just another development. Every day, something, there was a different angle or something would happen. And then, of course, we had a little bit of crossover into gangland type stuff when Dank's house was shot up. So, you know, if that wasn't a little twist in the story. So, yeah, look, it was certainly very, very interesting time.
So just before we let you go, Quilly, obviously Bruce Francis, the former Test cricketer, he's been the one that's been campaigning for the longest. And he wants, as I said earlier, this information released under FOI, even though the 99.9% of the Essendon 34 don't want it to see the light of day. I mean, what's going to happen here? Can you crystal ball this for us?
Yeah, look, Bruce Francis is not an Essendon supporter, but he is someone who is passionate about this. And I recall back in the day getting a whole stack of emails from him, and he's certainly passionate. I understand that he estimates he spent over 20,000 hours on this case. I actually for a bit of fun with Mick Warner on the phone over the weekend, I actually applied my usual charge out rate to 20,000 hours. It was a fair bit of dough, boys. I think what's going to happen is unfortunately for Bruce, I think he's going to lose because if the players were saying we want this out there. Mm. Then I think it'll be different. I think it'll be very, very different. But I think the tribunal is likely to not allow the release of this information for that as the main reason. There'll be a whole stack of reasons, but I think that is likely to be the straw that breaks the camel's back in terms of Bruce Francis's case.
Mm. I love the government-run conspiracies. It ends up there's about 48 villains and no one can prove anything.
Exactly. Spot on, Scoop.
Hey, Quilly, always great to talk to you, mate. We know you'd be going flat stick today, so thanks for peeling off 10 or 15 minutes to run us through the latest, mate. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, boys. Have a good day.